Chapter 20. The Confession. Fun Jungle had a small jail in the basement level of the administration building. There were only two cells, and they weren't designed to hold people long-term, like in a real prison. They were merely to keep anyone Fun Jungle security arrested, for shoplifting, say, until someone from another law enforcement agency could collect them. To everyone's surprise, Kevin Wilkes, the bumbling idiot from security, had caught James Van Amberg. Kevin was quite pleased with himself and happily related the story to Summer, my parents, Marge, JJ, and me as we followed Honecker through the basement to the jail.
"I was stationed outside the front gates," he explained, "working bag check for the incoming guests. Then I heard all the commotion with Marge crashing into the parade. So I ran to the gates to see what was going on, and I saw Teddy and Summer up on that little hill by Hippo River, pointing at this big bald guy all excitedly."
"Wow," Summer said. "Someone actually noticed us."
"Yeah, me,"
Kevin said proudly.
"But I couldn't hear you over all the chaos. I didn't realize the guy had tried to kill you, Teddy. I figured he'd swiped Summer's purse or something. So as he came out the gate, I pulled my taser and ordered him to stop."
"And he listened?" I asked.
"Oh, no," Kevin said. "Not at all. He shoved me out of his way and tried to make a run for it."
"So what'd you do? Chase him down and tackle him?" Summer asked.
No, Kevin replied. "When he pushed me, I tripped over a little kid and, sort of accidentally fired my taser."
"So you tasered James Van Amberg by accident?" Mom gasped.
"No," Kevin said. "I tasered a different guest by accident, but then she fell down and Van Amberg tripped over her and knocked himself unconscious on the curb."
Honecker cringed, looking mortified by this story.
"Wow," JJ muttered. "This is a real crack staff we have here."
"Thanks,"
Kevin said, failing to grasp JJ's sarcasm.
"Any idea what this accidental tasing's gonna cost me?" JJ asked.
"Well, the woman was pretty upset," Kevin admitted, "especially because it happened in front of her grandkids."
"You tased a grandmother?" JJ exclaimed, horrified.
"She was a very young and healthy grandmother," Kevin said in his defense. "Not one of those old, wrinkly grandmothers. And once Pete Thwacker offered her and her whole family free annual passes for the next few years, they agreed not to sue us. Anyhow, by the time we took care of all that and got Van Amberg cuffed and made sure he was only unconscious and not dead or anything, all of you guys were gone. So some of the other guards and I brought Van Amberg over here. And that's when I finally tracked Chief Honecker down."
We stopped by a door with a plaque marked Jail, Fun Jungle Security Only. Honecker told Kevin,
"You're dismissed, officer. Thanks for your work."
"Just doing my job, sir."
Kevin saluted and marched back toward the elevator. Marge glared after him.
"It's guards like that who make the rest of us look bad."
"Yes," Honecker grumbled. "I'd hate to have his arrest of Van Amberg cast a bad light on your destruction of the parade today."
He unlocked a door next to the jail. This led into a small, narrow observation room. There was nothing in it except six chairs, which faced a large window. The window looked into the jail, which wasn't that big either. It only had the two holding cells and a small desk for the guard on duty. James Van Amberg paced back and forth nervously in one cell. The other was empty. The guard at the desk was a young woman I didn't recognize. Neither she nor James seemed to notice us through the window.
"Mrs. One-Way Glass," Honecker explained. "We can see in, but they can't see out. To them, it merely looks like a mirror. Everyone but Officer O'Malley will remain in here while I extract the confession from Van Amberg."
He shifted his attention to Marge.
"And you will not speak unless I ask you to. This is my show, not yours. Is that understood?"
"Yes, sir,"
Marge agreed. Honecker turned to me.
"Before I begin, I need you to tell me for certain. Is that the man who threw you into the polar bear exhibit?"
"Yes," I said.
"That's him, all right,"
Summer echoed. Honecker didn't seem convinced.
"Don't be cavalier about this. Take your time. I need you to be 100% sure we have the right person."
I was already 100% sure. With his big size, his bald head, and his mean, beady little eyes, James Van Amberg was hard to confuse with anyone else. However, I pretended to take my time scrutinizing him to assure Honecker we had the right man.
"That's definitely him."
"Yes," Summer agreed. "He's the one who attacked Teddy."
"Very good," Honecker said. "Now, Teddy and Summer, as witnesses to Van Amberg's actions, I'll need you to stay here the entire time to verify or counter his statements."
He inserted a small transmitter into his ear, then pointed to a microphone with a red button by the window.
"If I look to the glass, I'm asking you for confirmation. You can let me know through that mic. Now, exacting a confession can take quite some time. Hours, maybe. A seasoned criminal won't be in any rush to admit his guilt, let alone turn evidence on someone as powerful as Walter Ogilvy."
He looked to my parents and JJ.
"None of you are required to stay the whole time."
"We know," Mom said, "but it's important for us to see that this man gets what's coming to him."
"No one throws my son into a polar bear exhibit and gets away with it," Dad added. JJ said,
"If that ape can tie Walter Ogilvy to all this, I want to be here for every last moment of it."
"Very well. Then we'll begin."
Honecker led Marge next door. The rest of us took seats in the observation room. The six chairs were in two rows, so Summer and I sat in the front while our parents sat behind us. Through the one-way glass, we watched Honecker and Marge enter the jail. James Van Amberg looked at them expectantly through the bars of his cell.
"Are you the guy in charge?"
he asked. I hadn't heard him speak yet that day. It was the same deep, gravelly voice that had threatened me at Dolphin Adventure.
"How long are you going to keep me here?"
Honecker didn't answer him. Instead, he told the guard on duty,
"You're relieved, Private. I need to be here with only Officer O'Malley and Mr. Van Amberg."
"Yes, sir,"
the woman said, and quickly left the room.
"I said, how long are you going to keep me here?"
James asked again, sounding more upset this time. Once again, Honecker ignored the question. Instead, he took the chair from the desk, dragged it closer to the holding cell, and sat down.
"Mr. Van Amberg, you're in a great deal of trouble. You threw a young boy into the polar bear exhibit. I have corroboration from the boy himself, as well as another witness, and Officer O'Malley here."
He pointed to Marge, signaling this was her time to talk.
"That's right," Marge agreed, staring bullets at the prisoner. "I saw the whole thing."
"There are also cameras throughout the polar pavilion that will certainly prove your guilt in this matter," Honecker continued. "That's attempted murder of a child. You could go away for 60 years. "I know," James exclaimed. "I'm so sorry. It was wrong. I never should have done it."
To my surprise, he started crying. Not merely a few tears, this was full-blown bawling, like a toddler having a meltdown. Honecker seemed surprised by this as well.
So you admit to this?"
"Yes."
James was no longer the tough guy who'd threatened me. Instead, he was a blubbering, frightened mess. Rivers of snot were running from his nose.
"Look at him," Mom said in disgust. "He's just like any other bully. Happy to pick on someone smaller than him, but the moment he's in trouble, he shows his true colors."
"I didn't mean to do it," James wailed. "It was an accident."
"An accident?" Honecker repeated. "How could you throw a boy into the polar bear exhibit by accident?"
"It wasn't planned or anything," James wailed. "I overheard the kid say he had evidence, and I panicked. Please don't send me to jail. I'm happy to turn over evidence on anyone you need. I kept records. I have names. I'll do anything."
He sank to his knees, sobbing uncontrollably. Honecker frowned. He actually seemed disappointed by how easy James was making this.
"Calm down," he said. "Who are you working for?"
"Walter Ogilvy,"
James replied.
"That low-down dirty snake,"
JJ exclaimed, loud enough that Honecker shot him a warning glance through the window. James didn't appear to have heard, though. He was making too much noise himself.
"He's the guy you want, right? He was the brains of the entire operation. I'll tell you anything you want to know about him. Just don't send me to jail."
"Whoa," Honecker said. "Let's start at the beginning. The more detail you can give me, the better.
Was the NFF involved with this at all, or was it only Ogilvy?
It was only Ogilvy, James confirmed. The NFF didn't have anything to do with it. They're a bunch of losers.
Really? Honecker asked. I thought you co-founded the group with Carlos Gomez.
Yeah, but it was a mistake. Carlos was weak. He only wanted to picket and hand out flyers instead of monkey-wrenching. So a couple months ago, I tried to show him what we could really do. There was a Taco Bell being built right by a wildlife refuge near Houston, so I burned it down.
James seemed excited as he told this part. I got the idea that he might have formed the NFF as an excuse to destroy things rather than to protect wildlife.
That was you? Marge asked,
and Honecker gave her a look that indicated he wasn't pleased by her interruption.
Yeah, James said proudly. It wasn't like they'd built too much yet, but I torched what there was. Sent a real good message. Only Carlos was furious. He chewed me out right in front of a big NFF meeting, called me irresponsible, and kicked me out of the group.
So you had a grudge against him, Honecker stated. When did Ogilvy approach you?
A few weeks later, James replied. I mean, Ogilvy didn't do it himself, of course. He sent some guys. They tried to keep his name a secret, but they weren't rocket scientists.
The story was flowing out of James so quickly now, I got the sense he might have rehearsed it, knowing he might have to turn over evidence.
They made me a cash offer. They wanted help stealing the panda, and they wanted to frame the NFF for it.
Which you were happy to do, Honecker said.
Darn straight I was, after how Carlos treated me. So I swiped some envelopes and paper from the NFF that I knew had Carlos's fingerprints on it, and Ogilvy's men used all that to print the fake ransom notes on. I also stole the license plates off Carlos's car, then attached them to a similar model, which we used to dump the vet in the parking lot here.
And were you involved in the actual theft of the panda? Honecker asked.
Yes.
How did that go down?
Well, Ogilvy had built this replica trailer, right? Exactly the same as the one the panda was in. So we waited at a rest stop near the border of Texas and New Mexico with it. Ogilvy also had one of the drivers, Juan something or other, on the payroll.
Juan Velasquez?
Yeah, that's the guy.
Summer turned to me, impressed.
Just like you said, Teddy.
I grinned, feeling proud that my suspicions had turned out to be right. Although at the same time, I was also enraged at James Van Amburgh and Walter Ogilvy for everything they had done. James went on.
That night, Juan and the other driver and you, he pointed to Marge, made a pit stop in Las Cruces. Juan bought you a decaf coffee instead of a regular one, and then he spiked it with some sleep medicine, too.
Aha! Marge exclaimed. So it wasn't my fault I got drowsy.
Honecker gave her another warning look to keep quiet.
Then Juan took over the driving, James reported, while the other driver went to sleep in the truck. We fell in behind them as they entered Texas.
He looked to Marge.
Once you dozed off, Juan pulled over at another rest stop and we all swapped the trailers.
How long did that take? Honecker asked.
Less than 5 minutes, James replied. We'd been practicing.
He looked to Marge again.
You were snoring like a chainsaw the whole time.
Marge turned bright red, but didn't say anything.
What happened after that?
Honecker inquired.
We broke into the trailer and grabbed the vet, James reported. Some of the guys and I took him while the others took the truck with the panda. They held the vet in a storage unit for a few hours, then dumped him here with a fake note to frame the NFF.
And meanwhile, you returned to the park in the panda costume, Honecker said.
That's right.
Why?
Ogilvy wanted someone to keep an eye on the investigation. I didn't steal the costume. One of the other guys did that. But they asked me to wear it in the park.
How'd you get the costume in and out?
I didn't. It was stashed in some of the tourist lockers here.
So you just walked into the park, got it out of the locker, and put it on?
Yeah, no one even looked twice at me. There were a lot of freaks dressed up like pandas that day, and once I was wearing it, no one stopped me from going anywhere, even the employee areas. Only I couldn't get close to the investigation. And then I saw that kid wandering around.
Teddy, the one you threw into the polar bear exhibit.
Yeah, him. Ogilvy's guys had shown me a picture of the little punk and told me to keep my eyes open for him. They said he once screwed up some attempt to mess up the shark tank or something like that.
At the mention of this, I grew queasy.
Walter Ogilvy not only knew who I was, he had specifically ordered a thug to keep an eye on me. As if it wasn't enough that his plotting hadn't already killed me once.
Anyhow, James was saying, I saw the kid over by the crime scene, so I decided to follow him around. Sure enough, he eventually went over to the panda exhibit and started asking questions, so I figured I ought to scare him off the case.
That's when you threatened him outside the dolphin tank? Honecker asked.
Yeah, I wasn't going to hurt him or anything, just make him think he could get hurt. But then he pulled some crazy stunt with a dolphin and ran off, so I split and dumped the panda costume in the trash. Ogilvy's guys were still worried about the kid. They said he could still be trouble, so I came back here today, like a normal tourist, then cased the panda exhibit. And the kid showed up again. I don't know what he did inside, but when he came out, I overheard him make a call and say he had important evidence about the crime and, well...
For the first time since he'd started talking, James seemed at a loss for words.
You decided to get rid of him, Honecker finished.
Yeah, but...
James's lower lip trembled. It looked like he might start crying again.
Like I said, I wasn't thinking straight. I just panicked. I'm not a murderer.
Yes, he is, Summer snapped. That jerk! He tried to kill Teddy! JJ couldn't contain himself any longer either. Throughout the confession, he'd been trembling, livid at what Ogilvy had plotted against him. Now he sprang from his seat and pressed the microphone button to talk to Honecker.
Chief, find out if that weasel has any evidence to prove Ogilvy's involvement.
Honecker nodded understanding, then spoke calmly to James.
It seems Walter Ogilvy was never directly involved in this crime. Can you prove his connection to it?
Definitely, James said. I'm no dummy. I secretly recorded all my conversations with his men. His name came up a few times.
Hot dang,
JJ crowed, then thought of something else. He pressed the microphone button and asked,
So where's Li Ping now?
Honecker repeated the question to James.
James said.
I don't know.
You don't? Honecker replied doubtfully.
Even though you helped steal her?
Like I said, I took the vet, not the panda. I heard Ogilvy had a buyer for her, but no one ever said who it was.
Do you have any clue who it might have been? Honecker pressed. Were they in the state? In the country?
I've told you everything I know, I swear.
Honecker abruptly stood and left the room. Marge followed him.
Wait, James called. Where are you going? I gave you enough information, didn't I? I'm not going to jail, right? Please don't send me to jail.
He started crying like a baby again. Don't worry, Dad told me. It doesn't matter how much information that jerk coughed up. He won't get off easy. He's going away for a long time. I looked through the window at James. He looked pathetic, clinging to the bars of the jail cell and sobbing. But I didn't feel bad for him at all. Honecker and Marge re-entered the observation room.
Nice work in there, JJ told him, but the time has come to hand this over to the feds. We don't have the jurisdiction to go after Ogilvy, and they do.
I know, Honecker agreed. Although I'm still not sure the FBI will be open to hearing us. They've just proclaimed that they've solved the case to the whole world.
Now look,
JJ began.
However, Honecker continued, the U.S. State Department has its own law enforcement agency, the Diplomatic Security Service. This falls under their jurisdiction, too, and I'll bet they'd be happy to scoop the FBI. I have some friends over there I could call.
You mean they could nail Ogilvy and make my sister look bad? Marge asked. Sounds good to me.
I don't care who handles it as long as they can get it done, JJ said. We don't have time to fiddle around here. We still need to find that panda.
Honecker said,
Unfortunately, that still might take a while.
How long? Summer asked, worried.
I have no idea, Honecker admitted. Days if we're lucky. Weeks if we're not. Maybe even months.
I don't have months,
JJ exclaimed. Neither does Li Ping, I pointed out. She only likes one kind of bamboo, and if whoever got her doesn't have it, she's going to be... I trailed off mid-sentence, an idea coming to me. Dead? Mom finished. Maybe not, I said. I think I know where she is.